Chapter 6. Sappridge just sat there staring. Gazelle was talking to somebody on an old office phone. The fence said he had only kept around because it had been there when he'd taken over the place from its previous owner. Tons of junk was there from before Sappridge moved in, he said. Quite literally tons, in fact. So he'd left most of it right where it still sat. Besides, it was also great cover for his actual dealings. All right, he finally said after listening to her half of a strange conversation that almost felt like cheap, iffy improv, the way he was hearing it. Enough! You've milked the gag to death.
Well, how are we supposed to find it if it might not be there anymore? Gazelle said to the phone, ignoring him.
Right,
she said, eyes staring down at an angle, unfocused as she listened.
You do realise how hard it's going to be.
What?
Yeah, all right.
Sappridge got frustrated enough to even speak to Sal.
What the hell? He said.
Your girl losing it there. I paid for some crap to sell my little cadre of freak shows around the world. I don't remember tossing in for a floor show. Sal shrugged indifferently.
Then it's free, he said. What do you care?
That prompted a derisive through-the-nose harumph and an exasperated eye-roll from the fence. Gazelle wasn't paying any attention. Her thoughts on the impossible phone chat only.
So you're dead and yet you somehow know what's going on here in the world of the living?
Gazelle said to the scuffed old handset.
You can be sure that what you say is even sitting there where you're sending us.
An answer apparently followed, to which she sharply responded.
Well, sure. What have we got to lose, right?
A couple more uh-huhs followed, and Gazelle lowered the meanness level and volume.
Right, she said. Well, if we do this and it does... Yeah.
Sappridge's curiosity was getting the best of him.
Gimme that, he said loudly. The show's over.
No, Gazelle said, though she was not responding to the frustrated fence.
That's not Sal. That's...
Hey, you know where you called, don't you? Then you...
Oh, huh? Well, how's that?
Sal didn't know what to do as Sappridge belied his husky, out-of-shape frame by springing up from his chair just far enough to lunge out across the table, trying to grab the phone out of Gazelle's hand. She snatched it clear and shot daggers at him, with eyes dotted with roughly normal-sized pupils for a change.
The phone rang when we were in the museum,
Sal said as Sappridge reseated himself and glared over his way.
It was a guy named Brethren. He says he's like from 150 years ago, and he hid treasure out in the west of... Shut up!
That was Gazelle. Her stare was more wilting than any Sappridge had managed, and she kept it up, blindly handing the hung-up phone back over the table to its owner. Sappridge took the thing back and held the handset up to his ear. Nothing. Not even a dial tone. But what had he expected?
We're done here, Gazelle said.
She glanced over at Sappridge.
Pleasure doing business with you, Mr. Sappridge. And my thanks for letting me take that call on your disconnected phone.
Whatever, Sappridge said dully. Points for eccentricity, but if you want to try to squeeze any more juice out of this particular raisinized grape, you're going to have to come up with a better sideshow act. The whole one-sided phone call thing is pretty good shtick, but if you think I'm going to buy that, you just shot the shit with a ghost on a non-working phone. Then how did it ring?
Sal said defiantly. He weighed a little over half of what Sappridge carried around, so he couldn't exactly come on with the same mass-based force of voice, but he had a fine laser-eyed stare.
I mean, do you think we somehow got in here before you let us in yourself? Went over and rigged up that phone as a gag? That's just being...
He's onto it, Sal,
Gazelle said, cutting him off.
Called my bluff.
No pity bonus today, but we at least got what we came for.
She turned her pointed gaze over to meet Sappridge's.
Nice change of pace, I'd say. Let's hit the pavement.
Hey, now, Sappridge said,
looking offended as he saw her push back her chair and rise.
You know I always treat you right. Sure, I gotta go low at first. You know that. I don't care what century it is. There's gonna be haggling.
You're right again,
Gazelle said. My apologies and thanks for the cash, Henry. We may see you soon.
Don't rush back too fast, Sapridge said as Gazelle nodded for Sal to stand and leave with her. I got to get paid for this junk first, and that don't happen overnight.
We have a long drive ahead of us, Gazelle said. Probably a couple of days.
Oh, yeah? Sapridge said. Where'd you say you were going? West somewhere, was it?
Yep,
was all Gazelle said before nudging the risen Sal toward the door. They were nearly out the front door of the old corner pawn shop when they heard Sapridge calling out for them to hold up. He ambled forth as they turned around and they saw that he was bringing the teal-coloured plastic desk phone.
You forgot your phone, he said,
coming up and presenting it to them.
It's not ours, Gazelle said.
Come on, Sal.
Fine, Sapridge said. I don't keep freak show props, though.
He turned from her and headed over to an old garbage can that sat beneath the sprayed-over display window. The can, too, being antique of sorts, the heavy type from parks and public buildings with a domed lid, featuring the hinged flap door that swung in two directions. This one had Expo 67 stenciled on its dark green exterior paint in bright yellow letters.
Are you saying you're what? Scared of it? Gazelle said,
seeing he was about to toss it in. He didn't stop. He was just reaching the can when she caved.
All right, we'll take the stupid thing if you're just going to throw it away. Geez, afraid of a plastic phone. Let me guess, you still do goat sacrifices on new moons to make sure it'll come back up there in a few days?
Sapridge raised the phone towards the flapper top of the trash can without a glance back.
Damn it, Sapridge, give me that thing.
He turned slowly around. She came strutting over and snapped it out of his modest grasp.
$50 now, he said with a big grin. Eat shit,
Gazelle said.
See you, Sapridge.
On her way back over to Sal, who was still by the shop's front door, she tossed a $10 bill over her shoulder and let it flutter to the ground. Nobody said a word. But once Sapridge had verified that the door had locked properly behind them, he went over and picked up the $10. Slipping the folded bill down into a shirt pocket, he smiled. He headed back to that little office where he did his real transactions. Beyond it was his private room, or rather rooms, for he had several of them back there, including a pretty tough little super-secret panic room. This one was dedicated to his personal items, particularly valuable electronics. He went over to the big wooden office desk that served as his centre of operations. He sat down in the swivel chair, rotated around and commenced to bring up a GPS map of the neighbourhood. A little red blip was moving down the street. Sapridge had sold his tracking device well. He'd simply unscrewed the handset's mouthpiece, slipped the little micro-gadget into the space beyond, and put the mouthpiece back on. A little sticky gum made sure it wouldn't rattle around. Then he'd hustled it out of them, pretending to be superstitious about it. He may not have understood stuff that even in modern day seemed like magic, but if there was some money where it was pointing, he wouldn't ignore it. After all, he'd seen other inexplicable things, not all that far removed from that impossibly ringing phone. This wasn't his first encounter with the extremely improbable, not even his third, in fact. And he knew that his desperate customers wouldn't be driving 2 days out for anything that wasn't worth it. He saw the red dot turn left, west, and continue on that way. Zooming out, he brought several counties into view and had his tracking software project a trajectory, adjusting in real time. For the next 10 minutes he watched. By then they were on a highway headed southwest.
Brethren said he can't see our world,
Gazelle was saying to Sal, relaying what the dead outlaw had told her.
But he's got somebody else, wherever he is, who can. The trick is they can't manifest here either, neither of them. But the other guy, Yuveli, I think, he has some way of knowing, and he told Brethren that the gold is still where he stashed it.
Sal thought about it for a long moment as they joggled through the noon traffic on the outbound highway.
This is totally nuts, he said.
So you think it's a waste of time?
I didn't say that. We need to be somewhere else, anyway, just in case What's-His-Face spills it about us. Which, you know, doubt will once he can. Kansas is as good as anywhere, at least in that we've never been there, so nobody would think to look for us there.
I've been through there, Gazelle said. Farms and woods and gas stations.
And HH, Sal said. Whatever that is.
I told you. He said it was the Hanging Hill, and that when we get close to the right spot, we'll see the hill. We start at the top and head northeast, following the buckle.
Sal's brow furrowed.
And if the thing he said is supposed to be a big tree is gone, and the spot's now in the middle of a cornfield?
Then we dig there, Gazelle said. He said they went 6 feet down with it, to be sure.
It'd still be there, tree or no tree. No tree, not after 150 years or whatever. So how do we know we're in the right place if there's no marker left?
189 paces, like Brethren said, Gazelle said, and a metal detector.
Do they go that deep? 6 feet?
How do I know? Gazelle said.
Look, either way, we need to be hard to find.
We have cash and they can't find us as long as that's all we're spending. The car's so old it doesn't have a tracker and besides, it's registered to my cousin.
You don't think that the museum thing's going to catch up with us?
If there's as much as Brethren says, if we can find it, we can fly out of the country on a solid gold magic carpet.
Sal didn't respond, but he spoke again after a minute or so.
I don't think metal detectors can find stuff 6 feet deep, he said. We probably need a ground-penetrating radar, and that would have to be a rental, which probably won't work with just cash.
Well, I guess we should just give up then, Gazelle said.
I mean, it's not like you could figure out where one might be that we could break in and just take or anything.